What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, guys, to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we're going to talk about a topic that I've been doing personally for the last 5 years. It has to do with nutrition. I love nutrition. It's intermittent fasting, so it's a strategic way to eat within a window for better mental clarity, for better cognitive function, for losing weight, for overall longevity and health and fitness. So we got a guest today. His name is Jay Verna. He's a fitness specialist for the Town of Webster Recreation Center, and he's been working in the fitness field for over 25 years. He is a certified strength and conditioning specialist through the National Strength and Conditioning Association, as well as a nutrition coach through Precision Nutrition. Jay loves staying active and working out and spends a lot of time furthering his education in the field. Outside of work, he enjoys spending time with his family and friends, playing ice hockey, reading, drinking coffee, nice, and grilling. Finally, he loves Harry Potter. With a side note, he shares a birthday with. He loves Star Wars and he loves Marvel Universe. So without further ado, welcome, Jay.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Let's talk fasting.
Sounds good to me.
Let's dive right in. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and your occupation.
Okay, as you mentioned, I'm the fitness specialist, which is just kind of a fancy term to say that I run all the fitness programming for the Town of Webster. We have, for those that aren't aware, we have a recreation center, Webster Recreation Center, which is the old Xerox Recreation Center. So it's in the Xerox area. It's Chiota Drive off of Phillips Road. And my job is basically to oversee all the fitness programming, the fitness center, all the day-to-day activities, maintenance, budget, staff, training, though I still get to do a lot of the coaching, which is obviously what kind of drew me to this field to begin with. So very brief, simple overview of what I do. So
you're a fitness guru.
I guess so, yeah.
Well, I'm lucky to have you here on the podcast. So a mutual contact told me to reach out to you, and you guys are both into fasting, been doing it for a while. So what is intermittent fasting?
Well, I think depending on who you ask, you'll get slightly different definitions. You know, if you look at like intermittent fasting, I think there's a few different ways you can look at it. There's like periodic fasting, which is basically no food or drink other than water for like a 24-hour period. Time-restricted feeding, which is kind of the more classic part of your day is fasting, which kind of happens anyway normally. And then you have like a feeding window within those 24 hours. A typical one would be maybe 16 hours of fasting, 8 hours of eating. And then there's also alternate day fasting where one day you wouldn't eat anything, next day you would have whatever your normal food is. There's also a protocol called the 5-2 diet, which is basically fasting two 24-hour periods every 7 days on non-consecutive days. So there's a variety of ways to do it. There's also related protocols called periodic or extended fasting, and that's something that recently I've tried, and that's basically 3+ days of no food. Or for the most part, no calories, but really depending on, you know, the protocol you follow, there are some things that you can certainly consume during those fasts, either to make it easier or certainly to, you know, keep you hydrated, that type of thing.
Right. So it's fasting is the top of the food chain, and then underneath that we have intermittent fasting, time-restricted feeding.
I've heard that synonymous.
Intermittent with time-restricted.
I think there is a bit of a difference between the two, but again, you know, if you talk to different people in the field, they'll probably define it a little bit differently. Again, I kind of like to think of intermittent fasting kind of is the umbrella that encompasses, you know, the time-restricted feeding, periodic fasting, those type of things. And then beyond that would be more the extended fast.
Because that's really the buzzword now. I mean, everyone's talking about intermittent fasting.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, I've been in this field for a while, the fitness and wellness field, and it's pretty typical. Something comes out that somebody's doing, and then it just kind of explodes big, and which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but along with that, a lot of misinformation comes, and people just try all these things without really understanding what it is, and sure, that's potentially problematic.
So when we talk fasting, that's been around for, I mean, decades, for centuries, for since biblical times, right?
Yeah.
So why is it becoming so popular now?
Well, I think first and foremost, it can be a tool for weight loss and fat burning, which, I mean, who doesn't really?
We live in America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's and, you know, in the social media age when, you know, all the Instagram fitness gurus are out there with their shirts off, I think it's certainly a big sell. For me, it kind of goes well beyond that. I'm sure we'll be talking a little more detail.
That's the next question. So your experience with fasting, so you can dive right into that.
Yeah, so I first kind of heard about it and started learning about it several years ago. I read Dr. John Berardi from Precision Nutrition. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
But
he and the folks at PN have a ebook. It's several years old now, so maybe some of the science has changed a little bit or caught up with it. But that first piqued my interest. Basically, it was a book relating the different types or protocols for fasting and then their experiences with each one of them, because they're big into self-experimentation as well and just trying something out, see if it works. So that kind of got me interested in the topic. And then I decided, well, what the heck, I'm going to try a 24-hour fast. And, you know, it really wasn't that bad. So I ended up doing for a year, I had one 24-hour period a week where I didn't eat anything, just water, green tea, and that was it. So I did that for a better part of a year. And then I started...
How'd you feel after doing that?
I actually felt great, and that's kind of why I continued doing it.
The day of, or the next day, or just the
day of, and even just overall, I think just giving my body a break from eating. You know, the other thing, too, that I really like about it is that, especially when you do an extended fast, you kind of get a break that week from meal prep and even thinking about having to take a break. You know, people don't think about those things, but I think sometimes... we've gotten away from intuitive eating. In other words, eating, listening to our body's cues. And I think, you know, as we talk further today, that's one of the benefits from trying fasting even just once, to whatever degree a person is comfortable for, is you do get kind of in tune with those hunger cues and realize that, you know, hey, if you go more than 3 hours without eating, you're not going to die. It's not a bad thing. So
that's just that. If you go on Empire Boulevard right now, you can find food everywhere.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
And we think we're going to die if we have a day without food, let alone maybe 6 hours without food sometimes. Like, I missed a meal.
Yeah.
I need to eat my face off. It's like, you're going to be okay.
And I think a lot of it's social conditioning, because if you think how our society has been, and a lot of it has just been over the years, you know, the nutrition is as much as it's kind of always been at the forefront. It's very much in its infancy in terms of a science. So there's still so much more we don't know, including about things like fasting. But I think a lot of we're just kind of conditioned that, you know, we have to eat first thing, we get up every few hours. And make no mistake, that works for some people. So I would never sit here and say, hey, no, you have to do it this way. There's really no one right way to do it.
Right.
I think if the underlying foundation of your eating is, for the most part, good wholesome foods, minimally processed, you know, good amount of fruits and vegetables, right amount of protein and healthy fats, you're probably going to do all right. And I would consider something like fasting probably a little bit more of an advanced strategy, maybe for people that, you know, do have really lofty physique goals, or as we'll discuss a little bit further, I think it can be life-changing for people with certain ailments, and just overall some of the health benefits and potential anti-aging, which is another buzzword, and I think that's a big sell when people hear that. But again, it's not a magic bullet. It's not for everybody. Right. But there's certainly some ways that you can try it, and in if it's something that you find is a useful tool, certainly encourage you to try it.
Awesome. So yeah, my story real fast with fasting. I've been doing it for probably about 5 years. It just made sense to me. It made sense to give my body a break, to repair, to do other things. Yeah. And with my job, being with patients all day, it's like once I start eating, I'm starving an hour later. So it's like it just didn't make sense. If I got 10 patients a day, have a big breakfast before I leave home, I'm starving for that first patient. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to me. So I started to push it back gradually. And then I started to feel the mental clarity, just like the fog lifted. And I wasn't hungry. Maybe my stomach growled a little bit, but I was really in tune to how I felt and the hormones being secreted in my body. And it's like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Just push another hour. And then, you know, 12, 1 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
No issues.
Yeah.
But the mental clarity was crazy to me.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really liked. And that's what one of the things that really piqued my interest. And certainly, especially with the extended, you know, multiple day fasts.
You're just
it's
crazy,
amazing.
Man,
it's amazing the amount of energy you have. Most people think, well, if you don't eat, you're not going to have energy. But it's actually kind of the opposite. Mm-hmm. Cognitively, like you say, clarity of thought, all those things were. And there's a lot of pretty interesting historical notes about fasting. If you do some reading and research, like prisoners of war that were, you know, starving and. You know, some of the stories that came out of that pretty much alluded to the same thing. You know, just having that mental clarity and, you know, being able to recite books that they had read from memory, that type of thing. So I think there's a lot to it. As I said, I think a lot of these purported benefits that you read about are probably, you know, might be a few years yet before science really substantiates them. But I think there's no doubt that in some way, shape, or form, especially those of us that live in are blessed to live here, you know, westernized cultures where food is plenty, taking a little bit of a break on a regular basis from eating can certainly be...
It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing at all.
Well, let's dive right in. We got a lot to cover today.
Sure.
So what types of fasts are there? And when should your eating window be?
Again, like we briefly touched upon, so if you're doing more like the time restricted feeding, I think a typical one is like, you know, 16-hour fast, followed by an 8-hour window. So, say you start stop eating at 8 o'clock the previous evening.
Okay, 8 p.m.
Yeah, 8 p.m. And then you wouldn't eat until noon the next day.
Now, side note, we all fast.
Yep.
When we're sleeping, we're fasting.
Yeah. In fact, I was reading something in there saying that that's basically, you know, we do it anyway and it's called sleeping. So for some people that say, oh, there's no way I can do it. And, you know, I get that all the time. My wife's a perfect example. And if she listens to this, she'll probably. But
shout out to Jay's wife.
And she's one of those people that wakes up hungry and eats. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No,
I'm not here to
no.
say that breakfast is bad. I'm not saying it's good. But the other thing too, kind of along what you were just saying, is all breakfast means is breaking your fast. So whether you eat it shortly after waking or 5 hours later, it's still breakfast. But yeah, so that's a typical one, but that can also be manipulated depending on the person. And if you're just starting out, you know, maybe it's you start by not eating too late into the evening, so maybe that after dinner snack that you normally have, try to not have it one night, and then the next morning maybe try to push off eating that breakfast just a little bit longer. So in other words, you're extending that fast a little bit longer.
That's been huge for me. If I snack right before bed, I'm starving, I'm ravenous in the morning.
Oh yeah,
and it doesn't really make sense, because you're like, well, I ate later, I shouldn't be hungry in the morning.
You know, the
but
thing,
I'm starving.
I think, and again, there's some pretty interesting research that kind of front-loading your day with, you know, your heavier meals earlier and lighter eating later. If you look at, like, the insulin response, it's much greater in the evening. And I think a lot of it has to do with circadian rhythms, and that's a lot of what intermittent fasting kind of is all about, is kind of following the body's clock. So that same meal that you might have in the morning will have a greater insulin response, which, again... in turn can lead to some of these potentially negative effects, you know, that we talk about. So
so let's go back to, so 16-hour fast would be 8 p.m. you stop eating?
Yeah, or thereabouts,
okay, so then you sleep let's say 6 a.m. you wake up. Mm-hmm. So that's 10 hours right mm-hmm. there. So you just got 10 hours done just from sleeping.
Yep.
You keep it going to, what time would that be? Let's see, 12 would be 8.
Yeah, yeah.
9, so, 10, 11, 12. So 12 o'clock
about noon.
Would be...
Yeah, yeah.
You would break your fast around then.
Yeah.
You're doing the 16-hour fast.
Another thing to keep in mind, there's a lot of different ways to go, and there's certainly probably better ways to do it than others. But again, just experimenting, a lot of it is just pushing that window of not eating a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. Especially those people that, you know, get hangry, you know, mm-hmm. they have to reach for a Snickers when, mm-hmm. you know, before their next meal or whatever it is. And again, nothing wrong with that, but, you know, maybe just trying it once mm-hmm. and just trying to push mm-hmm. that window a little bit more. But yeah, so if we look at a typical 16-8, it'd probably be something like that. But
what does the 8 mean?
Eight hours is the feeding window. So so if you go from 8 p.m. to 12 noon the next day, that's your fasting window of 16 hours, and then noon to 8 is the window of time where you could eat.
Where you can eat, gotcha.
But that can be shifted anywhere around the clock, depending on what your personal schedule is.
What's your sweet spot? What do you like?
You know, I've never been a per se breakfast person, or, mm-hmm. you know, right after I wake. So for me, it was really easy. I tend to do, ideally, I like to be done eating between 6 and 7 at night. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always happen, depending on the night. There's just things going on. But typically, I try to keep something like that. So whether it's done eating by 7 or 8, and then I probably won't eat anything until 11 or 12 the next day.
Are you faster right now?
Actually, I did eat something earlier, so...
Okay, yeah. Just curious.
Yeah, no. But it's just something that I'm kind of used to, and I don't even think of it. And, you know, I used to be more, especially when I was younger, especially a lot of heavy training, even if I didn't feel like eating, eating just to you know, get those calories in, get the protein in. And that's a good distinction, too. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, maybe when or when you shouldn't or who mm-hmm. shouldn't fast. Mm-hmm. If your goal is to build muscle, whether you're a bodybuilder, you're a young athlete, you want to put on some size, for the most part, you know, this might not necessarily be a strategy that you'd want to adopt, mm-hmm. at least not on a regular basis. But for me, I just feel so much better when I don't eat.
Right.
And I think we've, again, been kind of conditioned to think that we need to eat. You know, every few hours. And again, for some populations, some medical conditions, that is certainly, you know, something to look at. And I guess the disclaimer over all of this is, you know, you always want to check with your physician before you start any type of new lifestyle habit, particularly something that's nutrition related, like fasting.
And Jay said earlier too, this is a tool not for everyone.
Exactly.
But for a lot of us, you know, we can tap into this for weight loss, for longevity, mental clarity, etc. So probably the most important question today, what are the health benefits to fasting?
Well, there's we've already talked about some of them. I think, you know, weight loss has been pretty well documented. Is it
just as simple as eating less calories? Is that why?
I think that's part of it. I think reducing the hormone insulin response is a big part of it, because when insulin levels are high, it inhibits the use of stored fat as an energy source. And that's kind of one of the big mechanisms, and a lot of people have heard of and have tried or are currently on the ketogenic diet. And basically, when you fast for long enough, the keto diet is basically keeping carbs at a very low, a very restricted level. Obviously, fasting is going to mimic the same thing because you're not eating anything. To the point where your body uses up all its stored glucose or glycogen, that's that sugar, and then has to tap into those fat stores. So I think it, you know, fasting, whether it's doing, you know, the time-restricted feeding on a daily basis, alternate day fasting, extended fasting, those type of things, I think really can help overall with, you know, burning body fat or using fat as a primary fuel source, and then, you know, some of the other
and the brain too. So the brain,
the
brain prefers to use ketone bodies, which are fats, right?
Yeah. Sugar? So what happens is when you restrict food, carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. But you know, as I said, fasting is going to do essentially the same thing. Once you get to the point where there's no incoming energy and you've used all your stored glucose, mm-hmm. The liver will produce ketone bodies, hence ketogenesis or a ketogenic diet. Which in turn mobilize those fat stores to be used as energy, and the brain can absolutely use those as well. And I think a lot of that is what helps some of that cognitive function and clarity. There's a lot of really pretty interesting science that gets pretty deep into the mechanisms underlying all these things. But just even anecdotally, and I'm sure you've probably noticed a lot just in your experiences with intermittent fasting, just how much better you feel is
cleaner, lighter, looser.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and again, talking about some of the other benefits, you know, you hear anti-aging, you hear, some potential benefits in terms of cancer and reducing tumor growth and those type of things. And, you know, a couple of the mechanisms, what they call autophagy, mm-hmm. which is basically, cells cleaning out or repairing damaged cell parts, throwing them out, building new ones, or that apoptosis, which is basically programmed cell death. Those are two things that I think can help promote some of these anti-aging effects and some of the potential benefits in cancer treatments and therapy. But if we're constantly taking in energy through food, the body is constantly diverting that energy to digestion and absorption. So one of the things you see with fasting is without having to worry about digestion, the body can basically renovate and rejuvenate itself by, rebuilding cellular structures, removing old and damaged cells, things like that. So there seems to be quite a bit of promise when it comes to that whole anti-aging and some of the preventative mechanisms when it comes to a lot of the metabolic diseases, and not just cancer, diabetes, heart disease, all those types of things.
The big ones that kill a lot of us.
Yep, absolutely. So, as I said, the science is probably a little ways away, but there's certainly some interesting studies that have been done in terms of reducing tumor growth, utilizing fasting protocols. There's also, I forget his name, I heard his... I heard him on Dr. Rhonda Patrick's Found mm-hmm. My Fitness podcast. Is it Victor Longo? Or
yes.
Longo?
Yeah.
And he's an Italian doctor, and he works a lot with people with metabolic disorders, mm-hmm. Including cancer. And he created what's called a fasting mimicking diet, which is reduced calories on a daily basis, which mimics a lot of the same effects we get from fasting. So, there's a lot of different things, better control of blood glucose or sugar levels, cholesterol, all those things. So pretty much all the things that our doctors sometimes yell at us for during our annual physicals, I think fasting protocols can help us in a positive way with all of those things.
So to summarize, especially the weight loss here, this is basically mobilizing our fat cells by resetting our hormones to do their job.
Yeah, yeah. So when you restrict calories or particularly carbohydrates, whether it's just following a keto diet, which is essentially moderate or higher fat, moderate protein, and very, very low carbohydrates, and or coupling that with fasting, it will cause your body to produce those ketone bodies, which in turn mobilize those fat stores.
You're giving it a chance to use burn it, glucose, the stored glucose.
Yeah.
There's a hierarchy, basically,
and
the fat.
And typically, like, the first, and, I guess it really depends on what you read, but I've heard anywhere from the first 24 to 48 hours before you enter that ketogenic state. Mm-hmm. And then from that point onward during your fast, you're basically producing those ketone bodies. And there's tests that you can do. That's one of the things I like to do down the line when I do a more extended fast, is get like some extensive blood work done and just kind of get to some of these markers to actually see what's happening.
Yeah.
But as I said, anecdotally, it's you know, how I feel is awesome. Certainly worth doing it. I've had good success and I really enjoy it. So
you're doing day fasts once a week?
Right now, I'm kind of just doing more like the intermittent, you know, time restricted feeding.
16-8?
Yeah. And then my current goal is maybe once every 3 months throw in a longer fast. So last October, I did my first three days extended fast.
Wow.
And then this past January, I'm like, okay, that went pretty well. I want to extend it out a little bit longer. So I did a full 5-day fast.
Wow.
And I like how that felt. And, you know, reading some of the research too.
So there's no coffee, no bone broth, just water?
I actually, I'm not quite that adventurous yet, but basically water, green tea or any kind of tea with nothing added to it, and black coffee.
Okay.
Because basically anything that doesn't have calories to it is acceptable. Or you can also throw in something like bone broth. And for extended fasts, for some people that might be helpful because the longer you go without taking in electrolytes, you know.
Could be an issue.
So the other thing too with throwing in things like bone broth for people that are really having a hard time with the not eating is it kind of gives you something to look forward to. So that is something that you can certainly throw in there. I found for me, keeping it simple works the best. Typically, I just have plain water and green tea. I've tried, you know, you can cut up slices of fruit and put them in the water as long as you don't eat the fruit, you know, to liven up the water a little bit. Carbonated water, as long as there's no calories.
Right.
So there's things that you can do. I've just found for me, I tend to be kind of a minimalist when it comes to those things, and it's just as easy to not, you know, I tried some of those other things, and it's like, you know, it's, and even for me, black coffee by day three, I'm just tired of it. I don't know. And I don't want to lose my appreciation for it, so I don't mind giving
it up. There you
go,
right. I know, that was in your bio, coffee lover.
Yeah.
Dude, you're a machine. 5 days without food? That's crazy.
Yeah, you know, it was.
Did you lose weight? Did you go quick?
Oh, yeah, you know what? I lost probably, well, actually, the 3.5-day fast I did last October, and then the 5-day fast, I probably lost just under 15 pounds.
Wow.
But a lot of that's water weight, you know, especially when, you know, the glycogen stores in the cells are used up, that tends to release water. So a lot of that is, and, you know, for me, honestly, that's not my primary goal. Just managing a healthy weight is fine with me. I don't really have any aspirations to lose a lot of weight or really any weight. But so I put that on once I got back to my normal eating. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of that on relatively quickly, or maybe not completely back all the way on, but that is definitely something where, you know, you can be where the weight loss can certainly, you know, be a benefit. So
now breaking the fast. I mean, this is an important question.
Yeah.
What did you eat? I mean, what was the first meal that you had?
You know, it's funny. The things that you crave when you can't eat are not what you would.
Not a burger and fries?
You know, for me, it's funny. For the first time I did an extended fast, I just kept thinking about, you know, man, I could really go for some grapes or an orange. Or, you know, I started thinking about, man, I want to make myself up this nice little salad with some mozzarella cheese and, you know, all that. But typically when you come out of a fast, you know, rule of thumb, good wholesome food, I would probably do... you know, some moderate protein and maybe some healthy fats. So maybe some kind of a salad with, you know, maybe a mild chili, something with beans or something in it. I mean, really, you can go anyway. I would say, you know, avoiding really sugary, starchy carbohydrates after and just kind of easing into it. So that tends to work well with me. So any kind of good, wholesome food, fruits and vegetables, some protein, healthy fats is a good way.
Awesome. So is there a difference for males versus females when it comes to fasting?
You know what? There is. And a lot of it comes down to hormonal, both, you know, reproductive as well as also appetite hormones, which in turn, I mean, when reproductive hormones are thrown out of whack, it tends to affect our overall health. So not to say that women shouldn't do it. and I think we'll probably get to, you know, those that probably definitely want to avoid it. But for some women, it could, especially those that are looking to, you know, have children, or even if they're not, sometimes different fasting protocols can actually, you know, cause hormonal issues that could lead to weight gain and you know, early onset menopause, you know, missed menstruation, and a host of other type of conditions. So again, that would be something that maybe you start, well, certainly you consult with your physician, especially if it's, you know, you're looking to, you know, get pregnant at some point in the future. But I think even more importantly, just starting kind of easing into it and just maybe just going a little bit longer between going to sleep and having that first meal the next day. Because again, a lot of it is just, you know, experimenting and then, you know, how does it feel? I mean, how is it working for you? So, so to me, that's kind of probably the biggest difference is it doesn't seem to affect, you know.
Is it easier for males versus females? Harder?
From, you know, that's a good question. I don't know if it's necessarily any harder. I just think some of those hormonal issues I was just talking about is not as much of an issue for men as it potentially could be for women. As far as if it's harder, now by harder, do you mean like more of a challenge mentally or from a
benefits? I guess I'm thinking more like hypoglycemia. Like, are females more likely to be that based on their hormone profile?
You know, that's a good question. I haven't really come across any research on that, but that's something that could potentially be, be an issue. And even just those that are prone to, you know, hypoglycemia just in general, want to be careful with fasting, because obviously blood sugar levels too low can cause, you know, some serious issues too.
Sure.
So you don't want to, you know, cause a serious issue by trying to, you know, adopt
going
a behavior
way,
that you think might
extreme.
Be healthy. Yeah, exactly.
So who should not fast? Like we said, disclaimer though, definitely everyone should run this by their physician first. We're not telling you to go out and start fasting right now if you've never done that.
Right.
But who should not fast in your opinion?
I think, well, we talked about, you know, kids under 18 for sure. They're still developing, so it's not something that the, you know, withholding calories is something that they would really derive any benefit.
And it's psychologically, it could, too. Their brains aren't developed. It's
exactly.
Like, don't even go there.
Yeah, no, no. They should be, we should be teaching them how to eat a good, balanced diet.
For sure.
We kind of talked about pregnant or lactating women wouldn't want to or shouldn't. You know, those who've maybe had suffered from eating disorders or have a history of disordered eating, you know, they might want to do a little research first or check with their doctor. Those with gout, because that can also, you know, the increased level of ketones can cause some issues there.
Uric acid to rise.
Exactly. And it tends to compete with uric acid, so it can cause gout flare-ups.
You don't want that.
No. Anybody that's had gout, knock on wood, I haven't had to deal with that, but it's not fun. You know, taking various medications, if you're on any medication, I would, again, certainly clear that with your doctor. Those with type 1 and even type 2 diabetes, type 1 especially, you know, and I'll also say those that are chronically underweight or malnourished shouldn't be restricting calories. It seems like obvious, but I would throw type 1 diabetics in there too. And, you know, just for those, I'm not an endocrinologist, so I'm not an expert in diabetes, but just for those, you know, the difference between type 1 and type 2, type 1 is your body just can't produce insulin. Whereas type 2 is, which tends to be more, they call it adult onset or more lifestyle driven, we see actually in younger ages, is when it produces insulin, but over time it just builds up and there's what they call a resistance to it. With type 1,
totally reversible too, type 2.
Yeah, in a lot of, you know, fasting has been shown to, you know, help in that a lot.
More sensitive to the insulin
signal.
Right, so our cells can take it in.
Yeah, and basically what happens is, and we talked about a little bit earlier, when insulin levels are high, it, you know, the body will not release those fat stores as fuel. So things just kind of pile up. Dr. Jason Fung, in his book, The Complete Guide to Fasting, does a really great job in outlining all this in a very easy-to-read format. And his practice is working with a lot of diabetics. And he's had a lot of success on his different fasting protocols in bringing their numbers down, reducing weight, and getting them to go off their medications. But even if you are a type 2 diabetic, definitely consult with your physician, because if you're on medications, a lot of times the dosage of those medications is set based on what you eat. So if you change your eating pattern drastically, that could also affect that too. So while I think it could be a really game-changing tool for type 2 diabetics, definitely something you want to work in conjunction with your doctor with, for sure.
So diabetes is so much more than just getting your blood checked for blood glucose. It's also insulin. I mean, we want to check our insulin levels. Yeah. Most chronically high.
Yeah, yeah, especially in type 2. Yeah, type 1 is kind of the opposite. There's none there, so that's when you actually need to have those injections, and that's potentially a life-threatening disease, though. Nowadays, obviously, that's not something that we have to worry about,
right?
Insulin, but yeah.
So my next question is recommendations. Can you go over that book again, and then any other recommendations for listeners who have gotten approval from their doctor but are new to fasting?
So, as I was mentioning, Dr. Jason Fung has a book called The Complete Guide to Fasting. It's an easy read. It's a quick read, and he outlines his rationale for why fasting works, but then also how to do it. What constitutes a fast? What would break a fast? Get it on Amazon for probably $20-$30.
Jason Fung, like fungi. F-U-N-G.
Yep.
I've heard him on a podcast. He's very easy to listen to.
Yeah.
Simplifies everything.
And his book is just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to read. Again, you don't have to have a degree in any kind of science or medicine to be able to understand it. He makes good analogies and definitely writes it with the layperson in mind.
Awesome. Any other recommendations for listeners?
I think we talked about a little bit earlier. It's just kind of start by, trying to avoid that, late before bed eating, and extending the time that you wait to eat or break your fast the next day a little bit longer. You know, maybe after you've done that, try skipping breakfast a couple mornings a week. And then, depending on how that feels, if you're feeling good, then maybe you take that next step and maybe you try a full 24-hour one, or go for as long as you can. You know, there's really no right or wrong. And then, just see how that feels. And then maybe, one of the different protocols, time-restricted feeding, see how that works for you. So, for a lot of people, it might be just, try to go a little bit longer between meals.
Yeah.
That's enough of a challenge for most people, quite honestly.
For sure. Now, when it comes to supplements, for me, I do the Pulse Method, it's called. I got that from Dr. Ben Lynch. He wrote Dirty Genes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just being in tune with how you feel. I mean, you take a supplement, I get anxiety. It's like, whoa, that's too much. My body's reacting. I didn't need that much. Maybe I cut it in half.
Right.
Maybe I'm deficient in that vitamin. My blood work showed that. I know I need that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need the whole thing. It's too much too soon. Same thing with this.
Yeah.
Maybe you push it back an hour every other day.
Yeah.
And then 2 hours the next week.
And you're in control. And, pretty much all the all I've read and, people's experiences with it, it's like, worst case scenario, you just eat something. If you really start feeling terrible, go ahead and eat. It's not, and then you just try it again.
Right.
The next week or whatever it is. So
every day is so different.
Yeah.
Like some days I get a headache and I'm starving at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
So eat.
Yeah.
Don't be foolish. And
exactly.
Push through it because I got to hit 1 o'clock to get 16 hours.
Yeah. And it's easy to do that. It's like, no, I set myself this goal. But, go easy on yourself and just, little baby steps.
I'm going to shoot from the hip here. I got
some
other questions I wrote down. So what if you only have a quick snack? What if you're hungry, you just have an apple?
Mm-hmm.
Is that considered breaking your fast?
Yeah.
Or are you still kind of in that fast after your body breaks down that apple pretty quickly?
Yeah, I think...
I guess the question is, can you get right back into a fast after just having something small?
I think yes and no. So, you know, anything that has calories in it technically is breaking the fast. However, one thing to keep in mind is, what is your overall goal? So if you're just trying to, you know, maintain body composition or weight or lose weight, in the grand scheme of things, that apple is not going to, you know, hamstring your progress towards that goal. Now, if you're talking about, you know, some of those effects with some of the more prolonged fasts, when we're talking about, you know, release of growth hormone and, you know, the autophagy and some of those other things, you know, then, you know, that might be, you know, something. But again, if you're talking about, you know, a handful of calories in the grand picture of things, while yes, it might technically end the fast, it's not that you wouldn't get some of those benefits out of that fast, mm-hmm. for whatever the length is.
Now, what about binging after? I feel like sometimes I do this, like I'm so hungry, I fasted for 18 or 20 hours, and it's like I deserve to eat a ton of food.
Right.
And yeah. Then I feel like crap.
Yeah, it's easy to do, and if I'm being perfectly honest, I've done the same thing myself. I'm like, oh man, what am I doing? Maybe not right out of the chute, but then weekend you're out, you're doing, you're you know.
For sure.
So I think a certain amount of just being reasonable about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, eat and enjoy some of those foods. The way I look at it, for the most part, for most of us, unless you have serious medical conditions, you know, seriously obese and, you know, some you know, life-threatening medical conditions, you know, enjoy life, you know, mm-hmm. have some of those things, just try not to overdo it. I think fasting on a regular basis in whatever way works best for you can sometimes actually help prevent some of that binging. You have a better appreciation and awareness of food, mm-hmm. what you're putting in your body, and you're like, okay, it's okay if I eat this, but do I really want to have this right now? You know, that type of thing. So I think a lot of it is just a learning experience.
Yeah. Can you touch on foods that we should be eating during when we're not fasting, during that eating window? I mean, you could fast and eat like crap during the eating window and it just negates itself.
Yeah. I honestly, it's really nothing mind-blowing here. It really comes down to common sense, is good whole foods, minimally mm-hmm. processed, you know, eat your fruits and vegetables, have those healthy fats, eat your protein, you know, have your carbohydrates, just try to minimize, you know, your starchy, you know, all those foods that we consider maybe not the healthiest, you know, maybe minimize those, and just, you know, have those whole grains, you know, foods with fiber in it, you know. At the end of the day, it just really comes down to just eating good, whole food, minimally processed. You know, it's not.
Yeah. But the takeaway here is that, you know, your eating window is equally, if not more important than the fasting window, what you're putting in your body.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, sure. You don't want to, you know, fast for you know, extended period of time and then, you know,
go have some ice cream and Snickers bars.
Oreos, yeah. You know, as good as that might taste sometimes, yeah, you want to make sure that the underlying foundation of your nutrition is good whole foods.
And we touched on this before, coffee or tea on a fast is okay if there's nothing in it.
Yeah, exactly.
No calories.
Yeah.
Okay. Is working out more effective while fasting?
You know, more effective, I don't know. I think you have more energy, so potentially that's one of the things too, and again, why I like to self-experiment. One thing that I was curious about when I did my first extended fast is, you know, how am I going to feel in the gym? And right. I didn't have any issues. Now, you know, maybe towards the end of a 5-day or 7-day fast, we're probably not going for any, mm-hmm. you know, PRs in terms of lifting. But, you know, plenty, you know, from an energy perspective, it's a non-issue.
Right. Now, I don't think this guy minds if I share his name, Kevin. This is mutual contact.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
He said you guys were working out hard during the 3 and 5 day fast. I think he made it just over 3 days, and you did 5, which is crazy. But you're still working out.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Just keep moving, keep working out. And again, it comes down to finding out what works. Experiment.
Yeah.
You know, you know, if you start feeling terrible, make adjustments. And again, doing a prolonged fast isn't for everybody. I'm not mm-hmm. saying everybody should
for
do
sure.
it. Most people probably shouldn't. For me, it's I I just like being challenged, and I wanted to see, hey, can I do this? And it's funny, the longer I went, the longer I wanted to keep it going. Yeah. So maybe next time I'll do 7. Who knows? We'll see.
You're an animal. So what do the critics say about fasting?
Well, I think, you know, I guess it depends on what you mean by critics. There's always going to be detractors. And mm-hmm. again, I think we need to keep this in perspective and understand that this is not just the latest, greatest magic bullet.
Right.
Like you might see on, you know, certain TV shows that, you know, I won't name names, but, you know, or social media. Dr. Oz. Yeah. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah, yeah. This is my podcast. I say whatever I want.
Not to say that there isn't some good information coming out of those shows, but you need to take some of this with a grain of salt and say, okay, mm-hmm. this is something that's out there. How can it work for me? And right. Just be smart on how you experiment. So, you know, there's probably going to be people say, oh no, you need to eat. You got to keep your calories up. And for some people, they absolutely need to. The flip side of that coin is most of us probably eat more than what we need to. We eat more out of conditioning rather than need. So this could be a good way, again, to get really in touch with your body's hunger cues, how it feels, and understanding that that feeling of hunger is not something to be afraid of or that has to be immediately satisfied all the time. And one of the things to keep in mind, too, in a fast, usually the first 2 days are the toughest, but after that 48-hour period or so, those hunger hormones tend to be suppressed, and hunger tends to be a non-factor. I mean, by the fourth and fifth day, it wasn't a problem for me. In fact, when I had that first meal, I was a little disappointed. I thought I was going to all look forward to it, and it was like, so, you know, those are some things to think about. But again,
sure.
You know, be
tough
smart.
Question. So, I know. Yeah. I'm shooting from the hip there with yeah. the critics.
No,
but,
no, that's okay.
Yeah. Now, I think you're going to get a lot of business after this podcast because weight loss and all this. Are you taking clients or?
Yeah, so we...
With nutrition specifically.
I do work with people nutritionally. We have a personal training program. I tend to, with the nature of my job and my responsibilities, I'm careful about how many clients mm-hmm. I take. But yeah, absolutely. Cool. I'm willing to work with anybody, even if people that just have questions and mm-hmm. want to sit down and talk about it.
So how can listeners connect with you online and hear more about what you're up to over at Webster Rec Center?
Well, I have a couple different things. I can certainly give them my email address. The other thing mm-hmm. is we have a website and a Facebook page for the town of Webster. So probably the easiest way is just to Google the town of Webster and mm-hmm. go to the Parks and Recreation page, and all of our information is there, including our fitness programs. And then my name's there and my contact info is there. We also, if you go on Facebook and look up Town of Webster, Webster Recreation Center, you'll find us on there too. And we're always throwing out our programs and what's going on there as well.
Instagram, Facebook, like can
we
follow,
do. We do have
follow,
some. Yeah,
what about you though? Can we follow like your stories fasting? You should do that.
I've started Instagram account. I'll have to be honest with you. I'm not the biggest social media person. Okay. I understand the value in it, but yeah, maybe the next time I do it, that's what I'll do. I'll have to post some stuff or do like a Facebook story on it that people can follow for sure.
Just psychologically, physically, like what you're going through.
Yeah. I've also, I kept really good detailed journals. So cool. I like mark down the time, you know, this is how I'm feeling right now. You know, how it changes.
You that do your type thing. Of I'm not telling you to do that.
But that would be, I think, something that would be interesting for people to see and understand that, hey, it's not, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Now, I know you love to read. Mm-hmm. What are you currently reading?
I am actually went back to a book that I bought a while ago and looked over Why We Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker.
Yeah, great book.
And yeah.
I just read that too.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I don't know if I finished the whole thing. That was intense. That was a lot of material.
Yeah, a lot of material. It's the thing I like about that book is you can either go to whatever chapter or area you're interested in, or you can read it straight through. So I also heard him on Dr. Peter Attia's podcast, and actually a couple other ones too. He's a smart guy, and they're doing some really interesting stuff on sleep. So
I was blown away. I think there's one death per hour in the U.S. from sleep deprivation.
Yeah, Yeah.
I mean, that was eye-opening. That's crazy.
And even looking at the long-term effects on cognitive function in relationship to lack of sleep in Alzheimer's and cancer those different things.
Depression, so, anxiety right now for people. It's like you're not sleeping enough.
Yeah. And then some good information on, how to come up with a good sleep ritual and improve your sleep hygiene, as they call it.
Yeah. Awesome. So last question here. If you have a friend coming to Rochester who's never been here, where are you taking them?
You know, I don't get out much these days, but, I would probably, depending on what time of year, either maybe a jazz fest or show off some of the cultural spots here that we're known for, Jiva Theater, maybe catch some Garth Fagan if that's going on at the Nazareth Performing Arts Center. Lots of cultural stuff here. I enjoy doing that stuff, Eastman Theater. Mm-hmm. Or even just, big hockey fan, Amherst game or even a Red Wings game.
Are you fasting or are you going to eat something?
I'll eat something today, yeah.
Where are you going to go?
I'll head home. My son's got hockey practice tonight, so I'm going to make sure he gets
some
food.
With your friend. When your friend comes in.
Oh, where am I going to eat?
Yeah, where are you going to eat?
I'm not
going
to have him fast unless I really want to. Jeez, you know what? I'd like to say that I get around to all these great restaurants and I'm a big-time foodie, but, I kind of keep it simple.
You're going to grill and have some coffee at home?
I'm thinking that that's probably what I might do, Maybe I'll just cook him something. I'm not the best cook in the world, but I can do pretty well. Places like Blue Wolf Bistro there on Park Ave, yep. I like, a lot of places like that that have, a place that's got some good microbrews and some good food.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we're talking.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, thank you for your time, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
We almost maxed out the time here, but we could keep going.
Oh, yeah.
We could talk another two hours, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I appreciate your brain, what you're doing for Rochester, what you're doing in Webster, too. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys for tuning in. Hope you got a lot of value out of this episode. I know I did. Again, consult your doctor first before starting a fast, before starting really any new program for your health and fitness. But if you get the AOK, this can be a very beneficial tool for improving your longevity, your health, mental clarity, all the stuff we talked about, losing some weight. Again, it can be a game changer for you. So buckle up, guys. I got some great guests lined up. Hope you're having an amazing day. Talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me. Go to my website, driscollchiropracticny.com. Read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me info@driscollchiropracticny.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram @dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.